Yeah, thank you very much. It's really nice to be here, only for a short while. So what I'm going to talk about is a sort of ongoing project with John Hertigan from Yale Statistics Department. So here are the problems that we are interested in. We are interested in computing things. I'll have to erase it. So we want, for example, we may want to compute the volume, computing the volume of a polytope. So this problem is sort of hard, meaning that theoretically there are polynomial time Markov chain based algorithms, and some of them seem to be working. That's debatable. But what we need a much simpler thing. We want a formula. So the polytope will be given as the intersection of an affine subspace with a non-negative portend. So the picture looks something like this. So that's a polytope. So here A is a matrix, say D by N. And we'll assume that the rank of A is V, so it's a full rank, less than N. So that's the representation. And we also assume that the polytope has an interior point. That's a point with positive coordinates. So x non-negative means that, well, all coordinates are non-negative. So non-empty. Interior. So we would like to come up with a formula for this polytope, which for the volume of this polytope, which looks like a outlandish idea. So, but there is some heuristic argument that turns out to work really well in some non-trivial situations. So what we do, we consider the function f of x, which is this. Well, here I'll put n just for some suspense, but so its appearance will be sort of explained. The sum of logs of the coordinates. And this is a strictly concave function. So what happens? It attains its maximum on the polytope at a unique point, point z. And what's important for us is that this point is really easy to compute because basically you have a concave function, and so smooth concave function. So you follow the gradient, and you're there in almost no time. Right? So the point actually is sort of known in optimization. It's called the analytical center of the polytope. So the next thing that we do, we compute a matrix Qij, which is a D by D matrix defined by, so it's almost A times A transpose, but not quite. So it's weighted by this weight Z. So it's Aik, Ajk, Zk squared. It's a positive definite matrix, then, of size D. And then what we say after that, we say that the volume of the polytope is approximately, which is to be discussed later, so what that supposed to mean, is e to the g of z divided by 2 pi to the d over 2, where d is the sort of co-dimension of the problem, the rank of matrix A. The square root of the determinant of the matrix. And there is another term that sort of, we measure the volume with respect to the Euclidean structure inherited from the bigger space. And here we put the square root of determinant of A transpose. Right. And the meaning of this approximately equal, well, that's something I'm going to talk about later, but that's F of B. But I'll argue at some point that this is a sort of a rather intuitive thing to do, is to say that the volume of this thing is this expression. Right. So that's one point I want to make. Right. So the expression is clear, right? Why it is the volume, or why it has anything to do with the volume. Right? Well, that I hope to be able to sort of convince you later. But I understand that volume is something closer to hearts of people here, but what I'm really interested in is counting integer points in the polynomial. So, let's see. Yeah. So counting, so I'll be computing volumes on the upper level. Well, just to pay the respect to the interest, prevailing interest in the room. And I'll be counting integer points down there. Right. So counting integer points. In polydop. So we have the standard integer lattice there. So what we want how many integer points are there. And this problem is really hard without quote and quote marks because from the point of computational complexity, it's so hard that it's even hopeless, right? It's RP hard and whatnot. But we still want to count. And what we say, we'll make some assumptions. So it's only natural in this setting to assume that additionally that A is an integer matrix. And so B is an integer vector, right? What we do, instead of this function f, we introduce another function, which I call g, and that's, I was sort of jumping ahead of myself here. So g of x is this function. It's the sum of xi plus 1 times log xi plus 1 minus xi log xi. So again, overall coordinates. And for one coordinate, it looks something like this. So it's a strictly concave function. So this is x plus 1 log x plus 1 minus x log x. That's what it looks like. And in the beginning, it has a steep increase, but towards the end, behaves more like log x plus 1, right? Which roughly corresponds to the fact that as you get the lattice finer, then what you're really computing is computing the volume, not counting integer points. Then again, this is a strictly concave function, and we can find the maximum of this function. It's attained at the unique point z, which I denote by the same letter, not because it's the same point, but I'll just do it. So, yeah. And again, to find this point is not a big deal computationally. It's very easy. And then we compute again a D by D matrix Q, which is not the same as this, but different. Uij. I wish I could, but how? But then you don't see some important lines of the plot up there. Now, it would be nice to move this thing, but that's probably out of... Yeah, I thought, okay. So, but can you see it now? How about this? Okay. So, what we do, we compute a similar thing, but weighted differently, slightly differently. So, again, and what we say that the number of integer points is approximately equal, whatever that means, to the e to the g of z divided by 2 pi to the d over 2 square root of determinant of q. And there we'll put something is still missing, so there's a little sort of arithmetic factor is missing. So the determinant of some lattice, there the lattice is just the image of the standard lattice in ZD. All right, so now let me just flash back and forth. So, well, anyhow, if I had computer slides, right, that would have been gone. Right, so. Okay. Okay, so no, because what happens is so for example, if principal minors, so the main minors of this matrix have the greatest common divisor 1, then it's really 1, right? So it more has to do with arithmetic, not metric. Well, it does, because what happens here, you optimize over the polytop, right? And B is built in there. Right. Other objections? Okay. So now let me get to the intuition, and the intuition will be multi-level, multi-meaning two. So there will be the first level of intuition, and I'll do it for volumes here. So intuition, so volumes. So why does this formula make sense? So whether or not it's true. So volumes, intuition. First level. Suppose that I have exponential random variables. So suppose that x1, xn are independent exponential random variables with expectation of xi, is that number zi, which basically means that the probability that xi is greater than t is e to the negative t over zi, I think, if t is positive and 1 if t is negative. All right. So then, the claim that's very easy to check, then the density of the vector x capital, which has all these independent coordinates, is constant on the polytope. So if you restrict the density of this vector, it will be constant on the polytope, and furthermore, equal to e to the negative f of z at each point. And that just checked momentarily. So you write the optimality conditions for that point, well, for that function, and you're there. So then what happens is that if I consider the vector y, which I obtained just by multiplying my vector x by matrix A, then the density of y at B, or in B, in vector B, so it's a d-dimensional random variable, so it lives in RD, will be equal up to this normalizing coefficient, so it will be equal to the volume of the polytope times e to the negative f of z, and then I think divided by square root of the determinant of AA transpose. That's because, well, how do we get that in point B? So, well, we have to have this vector x to be exactly in the polytope, and the density there is all the same. Right. But on the other hand, what we can say that y is a combination of many independent random vectors. So the expectation is, of course, the same vector B. And the covariance matrix is that matrix Q that we compute up there. So why not decide that, so maybe, just maybe, y is close to Gaussian. And the moment I think about it, we just replace this density by the Gaussian density with the covariance matrix, and we get that formula. Right? So that's the intuition. That sort of explains why it's not such an outlandish idea to approximate the volume by this formula. So we have, again, a bunch of independent exponential random variables. The only difference is in their expectations. They all have different expectations determined by the coordinates of this optimal point. And then what happens if we restrict the vector on this polytope, then the density becomes constant, which means that the density of their linear combination is expressed in terms of the volume of the polytope and some normalizing factors. But then if you assume that if you average enough of them, you'll get something Gaussian. And so you can approximate the density through the central limit theorem by the Gaussian density. And that's how this formula comes to be. So. Then similar intuition works for integer points. So integer points. So again, intuition first level this time, instead of the continuous exponential random variables, we take a discrete geometric or geometric random variables, again independent, and the only difference in their distribution is so what is geometric? So the probability that xi is equal k is some number p sub I times some number q sub I to the k for k equals 0, 1, all the negative integers, and of course p sub I plus q sub I equal 1. So what we want their expectations to be given by the coordinates of this point that maximizes this function. Then what happens? It's a simple observation to notice that if you take the vector or the geometric random variables, then if you restrict it onto the integer points or the polydop, then it will have constant probability mass function at every integer point. It's one. At every point, that mass function will be e to the negative g of z. And then you do the same trick. So you make up y as in before, and you say that the probability mass function, the probability that y is equal to b, is really nothing else but the number of integer points in the polydop multiplied by e to the negative g of z. And now you use sort of use the same type of heuristic argument. You say that since you're averaging a bunch of independent random variables, it's sort of not completely outlandish to assume that it's maybe close close to Gaussian in the local limit. Local central limit theorem, right? Has a what? No, I'm not assuming anything. Why should I? Oh, you just check it. You write the optimality condition, and it just comes out as a. But in 3 minutes, I'll do it just by waving my hand. So why is constant? Why it has to be. So, and then, of course, you observe that the expectation of this vector is B, and the covariance matrix is this matrix Q that has been computed right there. So basically, what do? You apply sort of local central limit theorem as if you could in the lattice setting. So this now a discrete random variable. So you should be careful, and that's where this arithmetic term is coming from, so, because it's in a lattice setting. You have to take care of the lattice somehow. Okay. So. Other reaction? Any kind? It's too early for that. So like Monty Python, so there'll be plenty of time for that later. Okay. So yeah, so that was the first level, and then there is a second level of intuition, which basically explains why exponentials here, why this function there, and why geometric there. So the second level of intuition, so for volumes, asks you to notice the following fact, that the maximum entropy of a distribution on the non-negative reals was expectation X is precisely log X plus 1. And the distribution is exponential. The distribution is exponential. And for integer points, the second level of intuition for integer points says the following. So that the maximum entropy of a distribution on non-negative integers was expectation, if you fix the expectation, from X is really this strange function. So it's X plus 1 times log X plus 1 minus X log X. And the distribution is geometric. Distribution of the maximum entropy is geometric. Now, what's going on here in terms of volumes, for example? So we ask ourselves, so what's the maximum entropy distribution on the whole non-negative portent with expectation in the given affine subspace? And we ask ourselves, that has to be an exponential distribution. But then necessarily, if we restrict it to the subspace, it has to be uniform. Because if it's not, then we can tamper with it in the subspace, right, and make it to increase the entropy, but still the distributions, the expectation still in the subspace. So it automatically has to be constant on the subspace, right? And what happens here with counting integer points? So we say that what's the maximum entropy distribution on the negative integer vectors with the expectation in a given affine subspace. And we ask ourselves that has to be multiple geometric distribution with independent coordinates. And if we restrict it to the subspace, it has to be uniform again. Because if it's not, then we can rearrange it on the subspace, among integer points in the subspace, so that the entropy only grows, right? So that basically explains why these vectors attain constant density and sort of constant probability mass function. Well, it takes a little more to get the exact formulas that it's e to the negative entropy, but it sort of makes sense. that it has to be e to the negative entropy. Right. But that's a computation. And one thing that I like to add that from the sort of physics point of view, it's a rather natural construction. So suppose that we take a random point from the polytop. Then what do we know about the random point? We know that it lives in the non-negative fourtenth, and that if it lives in the subspace, if we apply that operator A, we get a particular vector B. So, and it sort of stands to reason to say, well, if we don't know anything else, so maybe there is reason for that, and we just should take the maximum entropy distribution with this property, because maximum entropy tells us that if we don't know anything else, then we are just not supposed to, right? And a similar thing happens here. So take a random integer point from that polytop, and what do we know about it? We know that it lives in the non-negative fourtenth, and that its expectation is what it should be, right? And we don't know anything else, and maybe there is reason for that. And if there is reason for that, why not assume that this distribution is just a maximum entropy distribution? Because then it just says that you're not supposed to know anything else. And that works fine in physics. So if we ask about the distribution of the molecule in this room of air, then what we know about it, we know the expected squared velocity because that's the temperature. And we don't seem to know much else. And then Maxwell and Boltzmann say, well, if we don't know much else, maybe we're not supposed to know. Maybe the distribution of the velocity of that molecule is the maximum entropy distribution with the given variance. And the maximum entropy distribution with the given variance is indeed normal, right? And that's indeed the fact, right? So, okay. So, of course, after it's all sort of stated and explained, there is something to be proven. So when does this work, when it doesn't? But I've learned at one conference an interesting saying that proof is something that can be shown only to consenting adults, right? So I'm not going to prove anything, but I'll sort of sketch, I will not even formulate precisely under which conditions both of these formulas make sense, but I'll sort of hint at those conditions. Yeah. So for volumes, so under what qualifications, for example, as the dimension grow, as the parameters grow, under what qualifications we have, for example, asymptotic equivalence, so, qualifications. So metric. So this qualification is basically metric because if you integrate characteristic functions, what do you have to care about? You have to care about their behavior in the neighborhood of the origin, because outside of the origin, everything is smooth. So one thing is to consider a quadratic form defined on RD, right? Which is one half just for the normalizing effect. So, and then those z sub i's, and then a sub I scalar product t. There are a sub I. So if you look at the matrix A, it slices into columns. A1, A2, AN. So it's a quadratic form, and positive definite for that because the matrix has full rank. And what we care about its smallest eigenvalue. So U of T. And what we really need, we need the smallest eigenvalue to be big enough. So basically, the conditions are that if these vectors, A sub I, Z sub I, are not too, so this is just the Euclidean norm, are not too long, then if the eigenvalue grows faster than roughly the d squared log n, well, theta squared, then there is asymptotic equivalence. The formula is asymptotically exact. And that's done by a standard sort of characteristic function exercise. Yes? D is the codimension, is the number of constraints that you throw in. Say it again? Oh, up to constant one, right. So it's really exact, synthetically exact. Right. And that's just some exercise in the central limit theorem. But there is one example that we were very interested in, and which is not, as we hope, is a simple exercise. When we compute the volume of the what's called transportation polytope, M by N non-negative matrices with prescribed row and column sums. Row and column sums. And it's an interesting polytope. And if you look at this condition, then it's violated. So the eigenvalue is not as big as we would have wanted it to be, but it's barely not as big. It's just sort of tags alone with this expression. And then what happens there is we still get an asymptotic formula, but not quite that one. So it has to be corrected by what is called the Edgeworth correction to the central limit theorem, which takes into account not only the expectation and the covariance, but also the third and fourth cumulants. So plus third and fourth cumulants. But we are still in the realm of, but barely on the boundary of the central limit theorem. So it's almost central limit, but you have to correct it with something that takes into account higher moments. Right. So for us, that was a very interesting situation. There, it's not quite Gaussian, but it's not very far. And this correction factor can be written explicitly, and it's also computable, and everything is fine. So when we go to the integer points business, well, then we're in the realm of lattice random variables, and that's not very nice because their characteristic function is kind of periodic and things. So we have to care about not only what goes in the origin, but what goes far away from the origin. So qualifications here metric conditions, but also plus some Diophantine conditions, because clearly the thing is not continuous. If you push your polytope just a little bit, all of a sudden it stops containing any integer points at all. And so these Diophantine conditions basically says something like that, that if you look at the standard basis of the lattice Gn, of Z sub n, And what do you want? You want to be lucky, meaning that suppose we found subsets. Actually, I should say, yeah, I guess Z sub D, right? Found subsets Y, I, and Z sub N, that when you apply that operator that produce the basis vectors, so A, Y, E sub I, for all Y sub I, and that these subsets, if we are lucky, that they kind of spread around. So we look at the quadratic form on Rn, which is sort of average over a bunch of scalar products. And these are quadratic forms on Rn. And what we want from these quadratic forms that their maximum eigenvalue is not too large. So, and so then the qualification says that if rho roughly is, let's say, smaller, much smaller than something like 1 over d log n, then and metric conditions hold, then there is the formula is asymptotically exact. And again, there is an interesting case that is basically this whole thing was inspired by this problem. So what's the number of non-negative integer matrices was prescribed row and column sums. Right. So non-negative integer matrices which prescribe row and column sums are precisely integer matrices, integer points in some polytop. And it turns out that this formula holds, but not quite. So one should add, again, this Edgeworth correction factor to the central limit theorem, which takes into account the third and fourth cumulants, and then the formula becomes asymptotically exact. So, and again, it's sort of all computable. Now, I'm